A Podshape production.
It was a sunny Saturday in Adelaide on the 25th of August 1973. It was getting close to footy finals time, and Les and Kathy Ratcliffe and their young son David and daughter Joanne were excited to watch their beloved Norwood on the Redlegs play.
The Rover will put it forward from centre wing towards centre half forward. Hobby in the front spot. Couldn't pull it down. Knocked on intelligently by Sorrell. Full mark for that one over the Grimwood. He's slow, the little Rover, but gets his boot in towards the goal just in time to squeak.
On the other side of town, four-year-old Kirsty Gordon was not as excited about a football game, but she was excited about being with her nan for the day, who was a Norwood fan and was planning to take her granddaughter to her fortnightly ritual at Adelaide Oval. The day started like any other, but by the time the sun went down, two families' lives were changed forever.
Well, of all the baffling crimes that have been committed in this city, few are more heartbreaking than the disappearance of Kirsty Gordon and Joanne Ratcliffe.
We're particularly looking for information concerning the happenings at the Adelaide Oval during the last quarter of the game.
This is Little Lost Girls. Episode 4, The Barrels. In the last episode, we met ex-bikey and now private investigator Robert Cameron, or as he's more affectionately known.
I'm Bear, or Robert Cameron.
He's a big bloke with an even bigger heart, and he's not in the search for Joanne and Kirsty for the $1 million reward. He actually wants to help Susie and anyone affected by this terrible tragedy. We also heard about Mark Marshall, who's confessed to knowing about what happened to Joanne and Kirsty. You can hear that in previous episodes. In Bear's mind, Mark Marshall should probably be in a psychiatric unit, not in jail, as he thinks there's some deep psychological issues that won't be helped by jail time. It's been shown through his years of prison time, Mark Marshall still collects child pornography and has not been rehabilitated. Bear tells me how he first met Susie.
Susie got in touch with me through social media, I believe, or actually because I'd done a couple of interviews with Channel 7 and that, and when I was handing the evidence in.
Hart's grandson, convicted pedophile Mark Marshall, has detailed evidence against his grandfather from inside prison. That material used by private investigators to uncover what they believe is crucial evidence.
Straight away, the hair stood up on the back of my neck, and that was confirmation that his story has some substance.
Yeah, somehow Susie, probably through that media thing, she was on the same news segment. That's how she found out about me and what I was doing. And we ended up meeting up and becoming friends.
So let's just run through a bit of a timeline here. January 2007 is when Mark Marshall writes a confession letter, for want of a better word, saying his grandfather was involved in the disappearance of Joanne and Kirsty. Then in March 2007, Marshall speaks about his confession before the Commissioner Mulligan as part of the Children in State Care Commission of Inquiry. That detail of that State Care Commission of Inquiry is actually sealed, but it was leaked, is that right?
Yes.
It was leaked was online for maybe about 6 months before they found it and were able to remove it from online, not before... lots of people got copies of it, which I believe you have one.
I got a proper hardback copy from the inquiry.
Then in December 2008, major crime detectives, led by you, I believe, were given the documents and search of the Yatna farmhouse and the dam, and they removed a couple of items. Tell me about how all that came about, and what did the police say when you first went to them saying that you had information?
Oh, the police said it was all fantasy and fiction, and none of it existed. And then I said, "Well, we've actually found the place, and we've been up there, and we've been out there too." They said, "Rah rah rah, there's nothing there." And then they went to the wrong location. They actually went to the wrong house. I told them about the dam. There was a service tunnel underneath the dam, and they were still in total dis, disbelief of the whole thing. And I told them about the dam and that we'd found the service tunnel underneath it. And I said to the police officer, another guy, a friend of mine, Rambo, had gone out there with them and showed them. He showed them where we'd found various bones that apparently didn't belong to a human, but there was definitely an ankle bone. But that was from an adult, so we believe that may have been an Aboriginal remain. Rambo took them out there, and they stood on a big rainwater tank in the creek. And a friend of mine was actually up in the hill filming the whole thing happening, just to be sure that my friend wouldn't disappear, etc. One of the police officers actually slipped and nearly fell into the water. And when I went to do the interview, when I was handing in evidence, I was telling him, I said, you know, when you slipped off the barrel? And he goes, yeah. And I said, well, you nearly went into the tunnel. I said, the tunnel's right there. And then he got interested, and he sat up and got very interested about the whole thing. And he didn't know anything about the tunnel because it was very well concealed. And we got down there on our hands and knees in amongst the mud and the water and everything. We took out, we took a bilge pump out there. We took winches and everything. We pulled all the crap out of the creek so we could get into the entrance there. And then the way we found it, we actually found a gate laying under a tree, a great big steel gate to it. And it was like 8 feet high. We thought, shit. There's a tunnel here. There is a tunnel here. And so we started looking for it, and then we found the tunnel. But after I'd pointed out that police officer had nearly slipped into that tunnel, he became very, very interested in the whole thing again. And, that's where we found the barrels, inside that tunnel, and it had been sealed up for years and years and years.
Now, those barrels were written about in Mark's statement. He'd talked about seeing a body in those barrels, and he believed that body was Joanne's. Is that right?
Somebody hid them there for a reason. There was three of them all up, and they were definitely hidden there for a reason.
What was in the barrels?
We got a vet to do a test on them. And the vet did a special blood testing, and it came up positive to blood and a very low acid, which is like a really powerful acid. And then we handed it over to the police. We handed samples over to the police, and they said, no, we can't come up with any human DNA, rah, rah, rah. And that was pretty much it. They just dismissed the barrels. When we opened the barrels, they stunk, and all the remaining liquid had poured out of them. And then we took the solids and got them tested, or handed them to the police. And we sent one off to a vet and one off to the police, and the police couldn't come up with anything.
So that first time that you went to the barrels was January 2009. In December 2011, Mark Marshall was on the cusp of release from prison, and he was caught stockpiling child porn in his cell. April 2012, the Adelaide Advertiser reports news of a confession by Marshall in which Hart, his granddad, is named as a suspect, and the document, as you've said, is provided to major crime police, who label it a fantasy. Why do you think police would label it a fantasy? That's pretty strong words after you've given them a lot of information.
Well, Hart was a known pedophile in Adelaide, and he was put on that property by government. He was sent out to there to get him away from Adelaide because he was molesting too many children. If you've got a pedophile ring that's catering for the high end of society, you'd probably want to protect that pedophile ring, wouldn't you? You'd probably want to make sure that that high end of society doesn't get caught.
no doubt there would have been low lives involved, but I dare say there was some high-end people involved as well.
So in August 2014, Mark and his team of private investigators, essentially bikie mates, sent the contents of the barrels that they found in the dam wall off for testing. Nothing of note was found, except for a weak trace of blood, but they couldn't prove it was human remains. Then 2 years later, on September 16, 2014, the police returned to the farm for more searches in close relation to the cold case.
Good morning, everybody. This week, the South Australian Police have continued their investigations into the 1973 disappearance of Joanne Radcliffe, 11 years, and Kirsty Gordon, 4 years, from Adelaide Oval on the 25th of August, 1973. This week, we've attended several sites at a properties at Yatna, which is in the mid-north of the state. We've spent 3 days excavating a well and examining a second well. This is in furtherance of a number of visits to that location over the past 12 months and 3 previous occasions where one of the wells has been excavated.
I asked Bear why police went back to the farm over 2 years later.
Because of our prompting and the fact that we'd been to the media, so they had to put up a bit of a public show that they were doing something. So they put up $1 million rewards and all that sort of stuff and went out there and did a PR exercise, and they went to the wrong property. They were 800 metres from the property they were supposed to be at. And I took Susie there. I took Susie out there at a later date, and I showed her. And as soon as I pointed out the well to her, she screamed it out. She goes, "Where's all the bushes?" Well, because in the footage that they showed her, there was bushes all around the well. She goes, "Where's all the bushes?" And I pointed at the property 800 metres away, and she went, "They're at the wrong fucking property." And she screamed it out. And, their investigation is botched from start to finish.
Bear, you have a few theories about what's happened here. The first is a pedophile ring. And is it your belief that that police may have been involved in that?
Definitely. Without a doubt. Two officers called Hudson and Corley. At least two. And but they were like the nasty guys that took care of all the nasty dealings. And they've even been busted for assaulting people in Salisbury and everything. And they also got busted for murdering Dr. Duncan in the Adelaide River.
The story of Dr. Duncan was a large story in Adelaide. George Duncan was an Australian law lecturer at the University of Adelaide who drowned in 1972 after being thrown into the River Torrens by a group of men believed to be police officers.
40 years since the death of gay law lecturer Dr. George Duncan, his unsolved murder prompted the state to decriminalise homosexuality. Wreaths were placed in the River Torrens where Dr. Duncan drowned in 1972.
Witnesses at the time declined to identify the attackers. And even the Premier of South Australia at the time offered government protection to witnesses after it was reported that they feared for their lives. Within days of the murder, it was suspected that the group of men who killed Duncan were 3 senior Vice Squad police officers. Public debate was so great that police called in detectives from Scotland Yard. Their report, which was not made public until 2002, indicated that Vice Squad officers Francis Corley, Michael Clayton and Brian Hudson had taken part in the 3 assaults. The incident, described as a frolic, failed to find sufficient evidence to prosecute any of the officers due to a lack of witness testimony. All 3 detectives were called upon to give evidence, but declined. In 1985, a former Vice Squad officer, Mick O'Shea, who had resigned in 81, told an Adelaide newspaper that the group involved were Vice Squad officers and that there was a cover-up to protect them. On the 5th of February, 1986, Corley, Clayton and Hudson were charged with the manslaughter of Duncan. Corley and Clayton eventually went to trial in 1988, with both being acquitted of the charges. During the trial, O'Shea made specific allegations that it was common practice for Vice Squad officers to throw homosexuals in the river. A police task force was set up. Reporting to the South Australian Parliament in 1990, there was insufficient evidence to charge any person with the murder. Repeated calls for a Royal Commission have been ignored. This information is important in this podcast, as it might feel it takes us down a rabbit hole, but Bear believes that there was some sort of pedophile ring in Adelaide in the 60s and 70s. He also believes that police knew about it. It would correlate with the Beaumont children who went missing in 1966. This pedophile ring was one of the reasons the Royal Commission into Children in Care began. In 2016, it was reported that a pedophile ring operating in Adelaide for more than two decades had international links with groups in the United Kingdom.
In the virtual world, he was the undisputed leader of the globe's biggest child abuse site, an online network of pedophiles in dozens of countries.
Bear's claims may not be as far-fetched as you may think. Bear also shared another claim with me, which is harder to believe, but worthy of exploring. Mark Marshall, you believe you know his real identity?
Yeah, I believe he could. There's a possibility. There's a very strong possibility because he fits the same age group. He's around the same age. He's at that location. All right. Now, as a very young child, maybe Grant Beaumont was spared because he was younger and he wouldn't have too many memories. And I believe that he may possibly be Grant Beaumont.
So you're saying Mark Marshall, who is currently in jail as a pedophile, could be Grant Beaumont, who was the youngest of the three children taken in Adelaide in 1966.
It's a very strong possibility.
Let's just run through that possibility. Grant Beaumont was four when he went missing in 1966, which would have made him 11 years old at the time of Joanne's disappearance, which is about the same age as Joanne. In Mark's statement, he talks a lot about him and Joanne were sort of friends and they'd seen each other before at the football. Is that right?
He does say that in his statement, yeah.
And Joanne, from Susie's account, was a friendly person who would be quite motherly and would talk to anyone. She was very aware of her surroundings, so she wasn't the sort of person that would go off with someone that she didn't know. So there's a high chance that Mark Marshall and Joanne knew each other from the football.
There is a possibility.
Grant was four when he went missing, as I mentioned. Mark, who you believe might be Grant Beaumont, was born on the 20th of the 9th, 1969. Have you explored any records of his birth?
No, I haven't. I haven't been able to do any of that. I just didn't have access to anything like that. We ran that theory and we tried to find what information we could, but there's nothing that could say yes or no about that.
Are there DNA records of the Beaumont children, do you know?
I really don't know. There'd have to be some DNA. Surely they took some DNA from the family at some point, surely.
Yeah, so that's...
But then again, it was a long time before DNA was really happening, wasn't it?
But if there are surviving members of that family, the Beaumont family, then you would think that...
That they could take a sample and compare it. I did mention this theory to the police.
What about Mark Marshall? Has he ever had DNA taken from him?
Not that I know of. I dare say he would have, because when you've committed serious crimes, they'd take DNA swabs off you. It's just part of the law. So there'd have to be a DNA sample somewhere from him.
Kirsty Gordon and Joanne Ratcliffe's disappearance is often overshadowed by the Beaumont case that happened in 1966, where three members of the same family went missing from near a Glenelg beach. In the case of the Beaumont children, it's widely accepted they were abducted. Kirsty and Joanne's case is similar. Lots of people saw them on the day they disappeared from Adelaide Oval, between the third and fourth quarter of football. There were reports of a large stooped man carrying Kirsty and dragging the older Joanne across the bridge over the river. There were also multiple suspects or persons of interest. Arthur Brown, a known pedophile and murderer who died before ever being convicted, and Mark Marshall's grandfather, Stanley Hart, who was also a known pedophile. Bear has made some big claims. Firstly, that police had knowledge of a pedophile ring in Adelaide, and that secondly, Mark Marshall might actually be one of the Beaumont children. We wanted to put this to police. Susie has told us that police have been helpful across the years, but the case has changed hands lots of times. There have been times where Susie must call police to ask them for an update. This is not uncommon. Police would receive lots of information around missing people often, and it would be near impossible to call everyone every time something new comes forward without first investigating it. Susie gave us the name of the officer who is now running this investigation. I rang him and he took our cold call. It was interesting. As I was talking to him, some bloke who'd called him out of the blue, asking him about missing children from the 1970s, he was suspicious. He actually quizzed me while we were talking and he checked me out on who I was on the police database. As I told him my name, he told me my address and my driver's license number. I put to him some of the questions that had come up through the podcast. He, as you would expect, needed some time to run stuff by upper management and said he'd come back to us. A week later, and after a couple of follow-up emails, we received an email from police media in South Australia. They declined to be part of the podcast, at least from an audio point of view, but did answer some of the questions we put to them. My first question was about something Bear had said when we chatted in episode 3. The question was, why did police at the time label some of the things Bear mentioned as a fantasy? Their response: we will not provide comment on the veracity of information provided by individuals, except to say that we assess all information provided and investigate the potential involvement of the nominated persons of interest. I also asked how credible the statement of Mark Marshall was. Their answer was the same. We will not provide comment on the veracity of information. You get the idea. I didn't seem to be getting much from my line of questioning, so we went to some questions that we thought we knew the answer to. The first: are Stanley Hart and Arthur Brown, although deceased, still persons of interest? Their response: the people named are either known pedophiles or accused of being pedophiles, and there is nothing to suggest any greater likelihood of them being the offender when compared to the large number of other potential offenders. The allegations against Stan Hart are very serious, and some people genuinely believe them to be true. However, it pays to remember that just because someone holds a particular belief, this does not make it true. I had a few more questions which I asked in my email. I asked about Bear's claims that Mark Marshall might be Grant Beaumont. They told me there's no evidence to support that theory. I also made mention of Bear's claims about a pedophile ring that may have been responsible for both the Beaumont children's abduction and Kirsty and Joanne's disappearance. Again, they told me there's no evidence to support this theory. My final question in the email was one that I just threw in, and I thought I knew the answer to it, but it turns out it was the most interesting question of all. The question was, are there any other persons of interest that police are still investigating? Is this still an ongoing investigation? Their response: even now, 47 years since the offence, we continue to have people nominated as suspects. These individuals are investigated in an attempt to either show possible involvement in the offence or to exclude them. The disappearance of children is given the highest priority, and this case has been subject of an ongoing review. We are committed to investigating any credible leads that arise. There were a few lines that sparked my interest in their response, and in particular, the bit about 47 years since the offence has continued and they're still looking at people nominated as suspects, and that they might be still investigating other people that are not named as yet. Could police have new suspects or persons of interest that they're currently investigating that we don't know about? We thought we'd call Susie to find out if she had an update.
Hello, Susie speaking.
Hi, Susie. It's Jay. How are you going?
We had a brief moment of small
talk. Yeah, good.
Thank
you. And yourself?
Yeah, and then I launched into the question I wanted to ask. Did Susie know there could be other persons of interest that are currently being investigated?
He did mention it when I spoke with him the other day. I wasn't aware of it before then. But, yeah, he did mention it the other day when I was talking with him.
And did he give you any information?
No, just said that they were investigating somebody else, a couple of other people of interest, and that was as far as he would tell me. He did mention he had spoken to David late last year about it, and Mark said, "Oh, do you want me to speak to Susie about it?" And Dave said, "No, I'll speak with her." And then things went a little bit pear-shaped. My depression, I was struggling with the depression at the time, so Dave thought, "I'll leave it."
Yep.
And now I'm bringing it up a little bit later. But unfortunately, yeah, other things happened in the meantime, and I never got a chance to speak to him about it. So Mark did say to me that he was going to kind of let me know a little bit further down the track, but at this stage, he wasn't going to say too much.
Any ideas?
Just that they are investigating a couple of other people.
Any ideas of where those people have come from? Has it been Crime Stoppers or is it something else?
I think actually it was stuff that was already in the files. Because Mark has said to me right from the get-go that he believes the answer's in the files. And that's what one of the previous detectives told me as well, probably about 5-6 years ago. He told me then that he believes the answers are in the file, but he was taken off the case and put onto another case, so he never got to follow it up.
So Susie has the same feeling and has spoken to police, but they haven't given her much information. Susie mentioned that police had spoken with her brother David last year while she was going through some tough times, and some things happened between then and now, so she hadn't had a chance to talk to her brother David. In fact, the last few years have been tough on Susie, not just because of her missing sister and coronavirus, but because it feels like she's had a run of bad fortune, to say the least.
Of 2019, 2020 has been 2 years that I'd like to forget. In April, I got the news that my brother had passed away. He'd had a heart attack and died in the arms of his wife. 2 weeks short, or 2 months short, sorry, of his 60th birthday. You never expect the call, or you can never prepare yourself, you know, for anything like this. But last year when I lost Mum, I was prepared to a certain point because I knew her health was deteriorating. It felt like somebody had come up and just ripped the rug right out from underneath my feet, and I was falling. It was just so unexpected. I'd only spoken with him, you know, the previous week, and, you know, just joking on the phone and, you know, listening to him rambling on about his bloody camper trailer. It was just, you know, it was such a shock, and I couldn't grasp it. I thought, oh, you know, someone's playing some, you know, stupid joke. This is ridiculous. And it just, at that point, I just thought, you know, I'm it. I'm the last of the immediate Ratcliffe family, and it floored me to think that, you know, we've fought so hard for so long, and everything that I've been fighting for it hasn't been worth it because I haven't got, you know, my brother or my mum to give them the answers that they've longed for so long. So I did hit an extremely deep hole.
In the next episode of Little Lost Girls.
People have told me what her real name is now, her last name, but I didn't know her. I just knew her as Joanne.
Inside the mind of the depraved Mark Marshall.
The tunnels was something they used to give you, especially the girls, but they gave me one. Auntie Caroline would do rude things with Stephen and get Joanne to do rude things with me in the toilets. Yes, we went to the car first, and then Joanne come with the other girl. She was holding her hand. Yes, and Granddad was following them.
There are over 38,000 long-term missing person cases in Australia, and the story you've just heard is one of them. We want to continue to help bring these emotional stories of ambiguous loss to you so we can spread the word and hopefully get some closure for the families. For as little as the price of a coffee a month, you can help support us to keep creating this content. Just head to our Patreon page. The link is in the show notes.